This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And in for Mike today is Ken Kale. We are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester and Lakes region. And we are also streaming on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com. And we'd also love for you to like us on Facebook. You can go to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And we have some active trivia questions going on there where you can win some prizes and all that. And Ken and I here would love to get your phone calls, 866-823-1077. And welcome back. So, Ken, you really enjoyed your lunch, didn't you?
You know, I really and truly did. It was outstanding, outstanding. And really, everything was delicious. So thanks very much to George.
Yes. To George. Yeah. And next, I would like to invite our next guest, which is Linda Ditch. Linda, she has a blog, What's Cooking in Kansas, There and Back Again. You can check it out at lindaathompson.blogspot.com. And she has such beautiful pictures on there. And she always has, she's very active on it. I think she has like thousands of followers on it. So let's welcome Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Carol. How's it going?
Very good. And I have Ken in with me today.
Hey, good Ken. Afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Very well. Nice to meet
like you.
You
had a great lunch.
Had a super lunch. Wonderful lamb and rice and green beans and pita.
Ooh, that does sound good. Oh, now you're making me hungry, and I haven't had lunch yet.
Uh-oh. So what do you have on your agenda today? I think we were going to talk some grilling and some grilling tips.
Yeah, are you sure you want to? I heard about the snow yesterday.
Yes, we still want to because we want to try and be optimistic here. But yes, there is definitely snow. You should see the Fisher Cat Field, and they're supposed to be having their first pitch at 6:35 today.
Are they shoveling? I mean,
they have to be, right, Ken?
They must be doing something. Melting, shoveling, I don't know. They're still tonight.
When I lived there, I loved going to Fisher Cats games. If people have not been to those games, they need to go because they are fun and, you know, it's fun to watch the team. And the games I went to, they won, which helps. But even, you know, it's just a fun experience. It's a great, great way to go. And you don't have all the hassle and everything that going to a major league park brings instead. So it's a great experience, great way to spend a nice summer evening. So
no question. It is a great family night out, and it all begins tonight, and all kinds of fireworks shows during the course of the year and everything. So it's always great, and a lot of fun food at a ballpark as well.
Well, exactly. And, you know, when I lived back there, I knew a lot of people who, even in the snow, would dig out their grill. I was one of them. We'd dig out our grill, and we'd still grill. We even had when it was dark, we had a lantern. We had special just to sit out by the grill so we could see what we were doing. And while we were cooking on the grill and standing real close by, trying not to freeze to death. But we still grilled all winter long, so...
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people do. I mean, sometimes it might be even more fun that way, you know? I mean, it brings you close together, right? I mean, standing around the grill trying to keep warm.
Well, and that's exactly why I like grilling anyway, because people, you know, you gather around, you're drinking some summer beverages, watching the person cooking on the grill, but everyone's chatting and laughing and just spending some time together, and it's a lot of fun to do that, whether there's snow or it's a hot summer day. It's always fun to gather people around the grill.
All right. What is your favorite thing to grill?
Oh, gosh, it depends on the day. I mean, probably my absolute favorite are bratwursts. I enjoy a good bratwurst done on the grill and then served with some sauerkraut on top. And but I, you know, even a simple hot dog tastes better when you've cooked it over flames. I mean, it's got a better taste to it. And we did a lot of steak tips and you know, chicken. I like to marinate chicken, and I have a Mediterranean marinade that's on one of the pages of the blog. I might have to try and add that too. I just posted a big thing about grilling today. I might have to try and add that link to it so people can find that marinade, but. It works great for chicken and pork chops to marinate with. It's got lemon juice and olive oil, onions, garlic, oregano, and you marinate it for a few hours and throw it on the grill, and it's so good. But it's just food always just tastes better on a grill. And I'm where I live now here in Topeka. I actually live in a downtown apartment that has no outside space. So if I want to grill something, I'm either going to the park, or I'm breaking out my cast iron grill pan or my George Foreman grill and grilling that way. So I kind of miss having a space where I have my big, we used to have a Vermont casting stainless steel grill that I used to grill on all the time back in New Hampshire. So kind of miss that.
You know, generally speaking, and as you just mentioned, everything tastes better when it's grilled or cooked over fire. But some people, there's an art to it. I mean, there is an art to it. You can't just throw it on and expect miracles to happen. I mean, it's not as easy sometimes as it may look.
Well, that's true. I mean, the first thing to remember is grilling and barbecuing are two very different things. Barbecue is at a low, slow temperature for a long, long time to get that smoky flavor encased inside the meat, where grilling is hot and fast. So, and one of the best things that you can do is not heat your entire grill to one temperature. Have one side a hot side, have the other side a cooler side. And then that way, if, food's cooked a little faster, you can move it over to the cooler side. Or if you get a flame up, don't break out that water bottle and squirt the flame up. I mean, especially if you're on charcoal, you'll just put charcoal out. So just, move it over to the cooler side until the flames die down. Then you can throw it back over on the hot side. And if you have the two temperature zones going, that helps, handle the hectic feel maybe of grilling sometimes, because you've got that safety zone where you can move it over and you don't have to worry about it because it's not going to burn on that side. So, but I think probably one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and I have heard this from many, many grill masters, including Chris Schlesinger at whose restaurant's down in Boston, and Stephen Reichland, who is a grill master that's on has a lot of television shows on PBS and cookbooks and some others. When you're grilling, leave the lid open.
I never knew that.
Yeah, most people close that lid. Well, the minute you close that lid, one side of your food may be grilling, but the rest of it's baking. And I mean, so you, true grilling is done with the lid open, and that's why you've got that hot flame and it's cooking. So leave that lid open, and have those two heat zones. And then if you make sure you get your grill really heated up, and then you scrape it down with one of those metal grill brushes, and then wad up some paper towels, dip it in oil, and use a tongs and rub it on the grate to get it all nice and oiled up, and you'll be ready to go.
Wow,
that's a great tip. It really is.
I never, ever knew that. No, see, I am not a griller. I like doing, I like to get ready for grilling. Like, I'll be the one to get, the meats and all that. And then, you get the platter all ready. And then you just hand it off to the guy and go, here you go. And then it's all done for me. But I am
right.
Like,
yes, I've done that many times myself.
I enjoy grilling day, actually.
Like, once you've handed it off, your job is done,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. But, I would like to, learn a bit more. So that's, a really good tip because, I'm thinking when my dad grills, I think he shuts it. I can't wait to tell him he's not supposed to.
I think a lot of people do. I really do.
I think most people do because they think it's helping the food cook and all of that, but you get a whole different taste and a whole different texture if you leave that lid open, because like I said, you're not baking the food, you're actually still grilling it. And I had one of the authors of The Barbecue Queens, which is there's a series of cookbooks that they've done, and her name's Karen Adler. And she told me that she can always tell when she tastes something that's been grilled and the lid's been closed, that there's a different taste to it. Yeah. So it's like, go ahead and leave that grill open, leave that lid open, unless you purposely want to bake something. You can bake on a grill. you can actually put stuff in there to bake. I mean, you get the temperature going, you know, with the lid closed. You can, and some grills even have a temperature gauge on it, so you can see what the temperature is. And when you're barbecuing and you've got it low, you've got the low temperature going, and so you would have the lid closed to keep in the smoke, so the meat gets the smoke in. But for true grilling, leave that lid open. Let the flames fly.
I like that tip. I really do.
That is a great tip.
Now, you talked about where you're living now. You're in a downtown apartment. You don't have your grill, you know, handy. And you talked about, you know, when you want to, you go to the park. That must be a great experience. And I can just see you, Linda. I bet you bring enough food and you probably invite people that are walking by or running by to eat with you.
I would. Yes, absolutely. Anybody, it's kind of a matter of, well, here's all the food. If I've got enough, you're welcome to it. I'm happy to share. But, you know, a lot of parks have the grill sitting, you know, already built in there. And you just have to bring your own charcoal and put it on there. And then you've got, you know, and you can use their own grills. And then, of course, there are many, many portable grills that you can purchase. And some, you know, some just made out of foil, as a matter of fact. But you can actually purchase, you know, or the little hibachi kind of grills and things that you can purchase and just sit on the picnic table and fire up that way, too. So just make sure it's out before you put it back in your car, because that can be a real problem.
So. Right. Yeah, right. Oh, my gosh. You'd have to wait all afternoon before it'll cool down.
Well, with charcoal, lots of times you can, you know, you can dump it somewhere that won't catch everything on fire.
Oh, that's true. That is true. I didn't think about that.
Or now, pour water over it and that kind of thing. Just don't set it back in the car with the charcoal in it.
Yeah. Now, is there a difference between, you know, because there are some people that I know that they don't like to do the gas grill. They really like to cook from the charcoal. So do you see like a big difference between those two?
Well, the main difference between charcoal and gas is controlling the heat. I mean, the heat is much easier to control with gas than it is with charcoal. You know, to get a hotter side or a cooler side with charcoal, you have to have more coals banked up on one side for the hot side and less on the other side. But flavor-wise, I can't tell much of a difference. The only nice thing with charcoal is it's easy to throw some wood chips on there and get a little wood smoke going if you want to add a little more flavor to what you're grilling. But and some people use the serious, instead of the little briquette, they use the serious big chunks of charcoal, and they swear by them. There are a lot of people that swear by that. I have yet to really notice the difference between one or the other. I say just use whichever one you enjoy the best. I mean, there are people that say you can taste that it's been cooked on a gas grill. I've never really noticed it. So, But, you know, and there are other people that say that people who start charcoal with the lighter fluid stuff, that causes a flavor to it, and I would stay away from, and I have heard that many times. So, but you can buy those charcoal chimneys that you just stuff some newspaper underneath and light the charcoals that way to get them going. So, they're a round cylinder, looks like a chimney, and you put the charcoal in the top, and then underneath you shove a bunch of crumpled newspaper, and you light the newspaper, and it lights up that bit of charcoal that you then pour on top of the rest of the charcoal to get it all lit. So.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But yeah, I have heard that spraying it with the lighter fluid does put off a flavor. So
it does, and you know, it always brings back memories for me. You know, it's like that. It's like a certain smell to it. You know, so
right, exactly. And then you know, and you always have the person that's got it lit. They add a little more, and it boom, you know, flames.
Yes.
But yeah. But as far as food that's cooked over either one, I can't tell much of the difference.
Okay.
So.
All right. What about tools? You must need to have the right tools when you're, you know, when you are grilling.
Right. Sometimes people try grilling with their regular kitchen tools and soon find out that the handles aren't long enough because it can, you know, you want a nice long handle to keep your hands away from the flame. And one that fits, you know, just go in the store and try them out. Make sure it fits well in your hand. And especially us women that our hands sometimes are a little smaller. So you want something that fits well and doesn't tire you out as you're trying to, like with tongs especially, trying to turn food with it and that kind of thing. I think as long as you have tongs and a good flat spatula and then the metal grill brush, I think you're set to go. You can buy oven, they look like oven gloves, but for grilling to help protect your hands from the heat as well. But I've always found that if I have a long enough tool, then you're all set to go. So, and like I said, skip the water bottles. You don't need that. So it's supposed to flame. Just let it die down until you're more comfortable with it, and then put it back on. So, but yeah, you definitely want tools fit for grilling and made for grilling.
I am really impressed. You know a lot about grilling, right, Ken?
She really does. What's the most exotic thing you've ever cooked on a grill?
Oh, my. You know, I would have to say probably buffalo burgers is probably the most exotic thing I've ever grilled. And you know, nobody knew they were buffalo burgers because if you've had buffalo before, it tastes pretty much like meat. But they've got way less fat in it, so it cooks much quicker, so you have to be careful not to overcook it. But that's about the most exotic thing. I mean, I do vegetables all the time, asparagus and zucchini and summer squash. You know, just rub some oil on it and put it on the grill and let it cook that way. I love vegetables.
Now, do you when you do the vegetables on the grill? Do you use one of those like vegetable baskets?
No, I just put it on the grill.
Really? Okay.
What about corn on the cob? A lot of people do corn on the cob on the grill. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I like to, open up the husk on the outside of the corn, but not take it all the way off, and then get all the silks out of the inside, and then put the husk back over and soak it in water for a few minutes, and then put it on, and it steams really nice in there, and you get some good smoke flavor in there. You know, but the husk protects the corn so it cooks and doesn't burn. So that's how I like to do it on the grill. And
fish
can be tricky because if you don't, you want a good firm fish. Like used to do a lot of halibut on the grill and tuna. Tuna is great on the grill, but fish, because if you get one that gets really flaky, the next thing you know, your fish is flaked all down through the grates and you can't eat it. So
yeah, that's true.
You want a good firm fish, and that might be where you'd want to use a special, you know, they have the smaller grate things, a special fish thing so that you can grill with it. But the key with fish, though, is you really got to oil that grill because they'll stick.
Right.
So you want to make sure that your grill is good and oiled. You want to make sure the fish is good and oiled. And then, actually, you should do this with all food, but especially with fish, don't turn it too much. Put it on there, let it cook on the one side, and then turn it, let it cook on the other, and then you're done. Don't be flipping it back and forth, because that's when it starts to fall apart on you. So just try and turn it once and be done with it.
Okay, all right. Well, you gave us some excellent tips on grilling. I can't wait to go share them and actually start to use them. Hopefully the weather's going to start to cooperate with us.
Well, and there are a few, and there are more we didn't even get to there on the blog, so you can go check it out and get all ready for when you want to fire it up.
There you go, listeners. You can check out Linda's blog at lindaathompson.blogspot.com. And What's Cooking in Kansas, there and back again. And Linda, as usual, thank you for a great segment, and we'll be talking to you again next week.
Talk to you then.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks.
You are listening to Food for Thought, and we are going to go on a short break, and we'll be right back. Hold on.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And in for Mike today is Ken Kale. You're listening to 107.7 FM, WTPL FM, powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And we are going to welcome on our next guest. I'm really excited to talk with her. It is Lisa Acus, and she is the owner of a full-service culinary agency. Welcome, Lisa, to Food for Thought.
Thanks, Carol. Nice to be on. I'm missing Mike, but hi, Ken.
Hello.
So delighted to be on the show. Yes, our company is the Lisa Acus Group, and we represent culinary people. We represent a world of culinary talent. So it's chefs and cookbook authors and food writers and food bloggers. Our whole niche is in food, beverage, hospitality, and isn't that a good life to have?
That is an amazing life to have. I mean, so you, obviously you must be a major foodie. I love foodies.
I am.
So how does one, I mean, so meaning like if I wanted to start a cookbook, I would call you and you would help me write a cookbook?
Well, we would help identify, do you have a point of view, a unique vision? What do you need to put together a book proposal? There's a whole actual process to it. I mean, there's plenty of people who say, oh, you should write a cookbook or gather your mom's recipes. And it really is a science in how recipes are developed and tested and the storyline. But in a nutshell, yes. I mean, we're often the go-to for people when they want to discuss those ideas. We do a lot of consulting around that. We do a lot of promotion for our authors once their books actually have been born, as we call it. I've been doing this 33 years as of this week, and it's been such a great ride to see how food has evolved in this country, how cookbooks have taken center stage, and how chefs have had to come out from behind the stove to really be media stars and celebrities in their own right.
Definitely. So you've been doing this for 33 years. So
yes, I'm old.
Stop. No, you're not, because I'm looking at your picture. You look very good.
Thank you.
So you've seen like the beginning of the Food Network and, you know, what the Food Network has done and how popular it is right now. What is your ideas on that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, ironically and wonderfully, our agency was responsible for media training Emeril Lagasse before he was on the Food Network, and we work with Sarah Moulton. So we were there even sort of before the beginning, and they've done a great service to the public in making so much food, so many people who cook professionally accessible to the average person. And it's become very much entertainment. I mean, you can really watch these shows and get involved and understand the personalities and also learn something and be exposed to different kinds of ingredients. You know, we're now into reality shows and all the competition cooking shows. They're very exciting. I mean, I personally often gravitate a bit more to what I would call a PBS model, where there's a lot of how-to learning. But again, that's also an age preference for me and where I've come up. But I love having our clients on Food Network. We've had a number of them on Bravo. And it's so exciting to watch young kids, literally, and every spectrum of age become interested in some way, shape, or form with food. It's not just dining out. It's farmers markets. There's just been this whole proliferation of loving food, knowing where it comes from, supporting local, whether you're in a city or it's local agriculture and it's your farmer. You know, you're all with me in New England. We live in a beautiful area, farmers markets all the time. And if spring ever comes, we'll be going there.
I know. Oh, my gosh. It's crazy.
Somebody just said, I can't wait. This was like about 3 weeks ago. I can't wait. It's almost asparagus season because we're right in the Hadley area. And I was laughing. I said, are those little tips going to come through the mountains of snow that we still have on the ground?
Now, you have, what else did you do before you started your agency? I mean, you've been in the culinary business for 30 plus years. What else did you do?
Well, I've actually been in publishing first. I came out of New York City 33 years ago, and I had worked for Random House and Crown and a couple of other places, and always working with authors and books. And then I really took what was a small subset of my clientele and focused on the food authors. And so my background, there's some financial background, but a lot in publishing. That's really where my heart is. I have a personal library that we use professionally as well of about 8,000 cookbooks. So
wow.
It's impressive, and it really represents the growth of food writers and the kinds of cuisines, a lot of ethnic and global cuisines. And I think of us often as a resource. So people, they want to be published, and they come and they talk to us, but often we'll work with chefs to help them get other kinds of gigs. It might be consulting or recipe development or talent. I mean, there's such a big world of food out there in addition to cooking or in addition to cooking and writing. And I think the possibilities now are so vast that it's really exciting.
It definitely is. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was just going to say the publishing business in general has really changed in recent years with lots of e-books and mm-hmm. all the how much has it changed in just recent years?
Well, it's changed dramatically in 3 to 5 years, and yes, the proliferation of e-books is everywhere. It has hit the cookbook market a lot more gently because it's easy to download a fiction or a nonfiction biography
sure.
and use
yeah.
your e-reader. For cookbooks, people, even though some of them will take their computers in the kitchen, but it's so visual. The color that comes off a page is very different than what you look at on a screen. The ability to flip through and really engage with the food, to spatter soy sauce on a page is very different than on your computer screen. And I have to tell you, I just did a project and I had to copy some recipes, and they were by far tattered and stained and rubbed, and it was just, it brought me back when I was making those recipes.
Sure.
There's something so viscerally sustaining about it.
Totally.
So I think publishing's changed, but here's the piece that hasn't, that's really encouraging. The need for good content is stronger than ever, is greater than ever. So good recipes, good stories around food, culture of food and ethnicity, that is all bigger and better than ever. So there's a however that information is translated into a form that people can read is almost irrelevant. I mean, I like to say ebooks stand for everlasting books. My preference is to hold it in my hand, not to read it on a screen. I find that often people will have two variations. They may buy an ebook, but they'll often get the hard copy as well.
I am one of those. I have a mm-hmm. Kindle, and I like to just feel the book, now, especially a cookbook. I would never download a cookbook on a Kindle. I love cookbooks. So I,
mm-hmm.
like you said, the interaction with it, and I write notes in my cookbooks,
right.
And like you said, it brings back memories, and most definitely.
Well,
most
here's
definitely.
The other thing that's really the difference is, of course, anybody can go online, and people are, and say, I want a recipe for chicken scarpiello or whatever it is. They can get umpteen recipes right off the internet for free. There's no
mm-hmm.
question about that. But where are those recipes coming from? Have they been tested? Are they vetted? Are they coming from someone with credentials? If you go and you pull a Marcella Hazan book, you know that her recipes are going to be absolutely perfect. And so you have to think about where is the information coming from. And when you read a book, you don't like a novel, okay, you make a dinner for your family or friends. You really want it to work. You want it to taste good.
That's right. That's right. Now, I'm reading here that you have cooked a dinner for Julia Child. So let's talk about that. What did you cook for her and how did that happen? That must have been just amazing.
It was. I was crazy to do it. I'm glad I did it. The one thing I tell everyone is it was not French food. You have to stay out of their expertise. I was very involved for many years with the United Way in Hampshire County, and we produced an event called Books and Cooks, and we brought in cookbook authors to pair with local restaurants, and Smith College was involved, and because Julia was an alum of Smith, I was on the original committee and organized this, and I said, I know Julia, I'll ask her if she wants to come, and I was quite young then, and everybody thought I was absolutely nuts and just, tooting my own horn. And I called her up and she said, sure, I'll come, which was wonderful.
Gosh.
Which is Julia. I mean,
right.
She was always so great. So the night before the event, I offered to host a dinner for all the big newspaper people and the sponsors. And of course, Julia was invited. And I said, where do you want to go out? And she said, well, I really love Chinese food, but there's no good Chinese. restaurants. So I moved the dinner to my house. I had been cooking a lot of Chinese food at the time, and we produced about, I think it was 10 or 11 courses of Chinese food. It took us an entire week. You know, we planned, we shopped, we prepped. Julia was so fascinated. She hung over the wok. She asked questions. She wanted to know about every dish. Why did we do this? Why did we do that? Her curiosity was one of the most endearing qualities among many, many. And she loved it. It was a home run. And I think her ability to say graciously, I just want to eat a home-cooked meal. I want to be with people who want me in the room and who I can share conversation with. I mean, that's the hallmark of her.
Wow, that is beautiful.
It was incredible. It's one of the highlights of my... I've had many, many, many chefs and major cookbook authors and writers at my table, and by far, you know, having her here, she was here for a couple of other events, was such a gift in my life.
The girl that just that would I the segment before, Linda Ditch, she's a Julia Child is like her idol. I mean, mm-hmm. She just adores Julia Child, and that is really
she
awesome.
She was the most gracious person I think I have ever met, and it's just, she gave us so much to this country and to the culture of food.
That's so nice to hear. Before we let you go, Lisa, I'd like to ask you, what do you see trending right now in food? Do you see anything trending?
Well, certainly we're well on the way to health and wellness in our food. I mean, thinking about what is good for our bodies, what we put in it. You know, local sustainable is absolutely critical, but it's plateaued. I mean, I sort of say that's where we should be. I think a lot of single subject. You know, people want to know what do I do with pork, or I want a little book on empanadas, or I want something on ancient grains or gluten free. So a lot of single topic. People often don't buy books by the author's name. We wish they did, and certainly there are exceptions, but they more often will go to a topic. And so the topic-driven books we're seeing a lot more of those. And also books that cross-promote from a merchandising standpoint. So it could be chocolate with a little chocolate book, or a slow cooker book with a slow cooker, because people think about lifestyle, I think, as the big picture.
That does make sense. That does make sense. Yeah.
I'm glad. I try.
Thank you so much for calling into Food for Thought. I full service culinary agency. We were talking with Linda Akus. You can check them out on the web at lisaekus.com. And for all of your culinary needs. So thank you so much for calling
in. I have to ask you, though, Lisa, did you enjoy the movie, Julie and Julia?
I loved it. And I had read the book beforehand. Uh-huh. I loved it. It was great. Well, thank you, Carol. And thank you, Ken, very much.
Our pleasure.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, you're listening to Food for Thought. We need to go on a short break, and we'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. And in for Mike today is Ken Kale. And here we are. Today is Thursday.
Thursday.
You know, this week went by very quickly.
National Gin and Tonic Day.
National Gin and Tonic
We haven't had
Day.
Any.
No, we haven't
yet.
Had any.
Yeah.
Not yet. No. You still have 3 hours to go.
I do.
So maybe I'll go get you one. You know, my assistant Amanda is back from her maternity leave, and she has the baby with her.
Ah.
I let her have the baby. Let her have the baby with her coming to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has been so fun. My dad's office has been turned into a nursery.
Really?
So her name is Lila, Lila Rose, and
Lila Rose,
isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
She is the cutest thing you've ever seen. She's so cute, cute little chubby cheeks, and it's just been so fun. You know, you hear her crying, it's like, you want me to go get her? I'll go get her. You know,
sure.
She has little swings in there, and her,
wow.
And you should see the kids pack and play now. Remember, like, you know what a pack and play is, right? Like their playpen.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You should see the new ones now, how fancy they are.
Really?
I walked in there on Monday and I was like, what the heck is this? We never had pack and plays like this. I mean, it's unbelievable, the stuff they have on them.
Bear that in mind, because my daughter is going to have my oldest daughter is going to have another baby in about a month from now.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, she's getting near the end. Whew.
Yeah, yeah. So I have to think about that. Pack and play.
Pack and play.
Wow.
And it has compartments on the side, and then there's even a on the top where she can change her. It has like a whole level there, and it's like crazy.
Wow.
All the new stuff that they have.
She doesn't know what she's going to have, by the way. So
oh, you know what?
Doesn't want to know.
I like that. It's
yeah,
a nice
I do too.
Surprise.
I do too.
It's a nice
yeah.
surprise. And, you know, I mean, what better surprise is that? Not knowing, you know? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, the Fisher Cats game tonight, their scheduled home opener, has been postponed because of, what fell overnight, basically, and the fact that it's a rather cold afternoon and early evening. But nonetheless, postponed tonight, so their home opener will be tomorrow night at 6:30 against the New Britain Rock Cats. And the game, tonight's game, will be made up as part of a doubleheader on Sunday at 1:35.
There we go.
It'll be 2 7-inning games.
Now, what do you mean by 2 7-inning games?
Instead of nine, when they have
oh,
a doubleheader,
they, do two
they play 2 7-inning games. Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
You know what? I did not know that. I just learned something today.
There you go. There are some people out there who like to see all baseball games be 7 innings.
Really?
I'm not one of them, but that's been advocated by some people.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, baseball games seem to be going, you know, a long time these days, like about an average of a little over 3 hours, but because some people would like it shortened. But no, I don't want to see it messed
with. I don't think I would either.
No.
You know,
no.
I mean, baseball's baseball. And it's always been 9 innings. I mean, I don't think it's something that's
right.
ever going to pass, right?
No.
I mean, no.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I would hate to think that.
Not in our lifetime anyway, right?
No. I mean, baseball is such a game driven by statistics that would throw the whole thing off right then. It would throw the whole thing off. So I would not like to see it. And I don't think it'll ever happen. Ever.
Good.
They do play, like, in minor league baseball, they do play the 2 7-inning games. But that is basically to cut down on the use of pitchers on a particular day. You know, so they won't have to use as many pitchers. And because normally they don't have as many pitchers as a major league team would anyway. So they don't want to use too many on one particular day.
Okay.
It's tough to bounce back and pitch the next day if they have to. So.
Okay.
And also it cuts down on the time, too. Because, like in Sunday's case, you know, teams have to travel to different places. And so there are many different reasons, but primarily is to cut down on the use of pitchers during the course of a certain day.
Okay.
Yeah. So a doubleheader Sunday, but tomorrow night, Fisher Cats in New Britain, 6:35 at Northeast Delta Dental Stadium.
There we go. And so, Ken, where have you eaten lately?
Where have I eaten lately?
Yeah, besides the Red Arrow.
Don't
say the Red Arrow, because I know that's what you're going to say.
Well,
my gosh.
I mean, that would be telling the truth.
You must eat elsewhere.
It's like a little magnetic field comes around my car when I approach the exit 5, exit 5 on Route 93, north or southbound.
Now, has everything been okay?
Everything has been very good. Everything has been very good, and, you know, the service is second to none.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I mean,
the drive-thru is opened.
I know it is, but you know what? And that's great for a lot of people. I mean, like, when I go to a place like the Red Arrow, I mean, if I go to McDonald's, okay, yes, so the drive-thru is fine. I like to sit down and enjoy the meal and have people take care of me.
There you go.
Fill my coffee time and time again, you know, my water. You know, and just to chat with the waiters and waitresses at the Red Arrow is fun.
It is.
You know,
it
so I mean, I know some people have to do the drive through, but you know, I if I'm going to go there, I'm going to go sit down.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
but
you know, if you're driving by and you need a coffee to go.
Oh yeah,
you know,
absolutely. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great service. I mean, it really is. But, you know, I will more than likely sit down.
Here we go.
And I know the weekends have been just amazing.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy,
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So where else have you eaten, Ken?
Where else have I eaten? Well, this week I ate at a place called the Horseshoe Restaurant, Horseshoe Grill in North Reading, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice place. They have trivia there on Tuesday nights,
oh,
and that's primarily
fun.
Why I was there. The food is very good, nice menu with a number of different choices. But, you know, I have to really make an effort to get to more of the places in downtown Manchester. We were talking about a couple off the air and that I would like to get. I did eat at Nolan's a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and had their jambalaya. Which
very
is very good. Yeah.
You know what they make to order also? And sometimes Lou, the owner, you know, I know him well, he'll come over and use our paper cutter every once in a while.
Okay.
So when he comes to borrow the paper cutter, he just comes to the office. He's there for like 5 or 10 minutes cutting a few papers. No big deal. But he brings his homemade beignets. Have you ever had one of those?
No, I have not.
Ken, they make them to order at Nolan's. They are amazing. Beignets.
Wow.
You know, that you get them hot and you butt. Oh.
Well, Lou, if you're listening, come on over this afternoon and use your paper cutter.
I'm going to text him and tell him.
Because I'll be right here till 5.
You will, for him to come bring you some beignets. Oh, my goodness. Well, up next is Kale and Company. And what do you have coming up, Ken?
Oh, we're going to talk a little baseball after 3:05 with an author, Peter Gollenbach, who has written a new book about the Red Sox.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love books about the Red Sox.
Do you?
Well,
there are a lot of them out there. And Peter Gollenbach has written a few, and this is one of them. And he'll be on at 3:05.
Very good. Well, Ken, thank you so much for filling in for Mike today.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it.